Okay, welcome back after the first 30-minute segment break there. I just, on the whim, decided to call my guest that and he was waiting on me to call. So we're going to go ahead and do this. I want to welcome to the show National Liberty Alliance's John Deresch. I think that's how he pronounces his name.
That's correct. Hang on 1 second.
Sure. I do want to read the mission statement of the National Liberty Alliance while I'm waiting on
okay,
him.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm back.
It says, the mission and purpose of the National Liberty Alliance is to provide an online national venue where the people can organize, communicate, and learn the science of government by consent. And I want to allow John to add to that if he wants to, or if that's good enough. I'll let him speak for a minute here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, a venue for that purpose, and to assist people to create what's called committees of safety at the grassroots level. So we're working to create those in all 3,000-plus counties across America. It's up to the people to take control of the political and judicial process, which we haven't had in quite some time, and therein is the problem, and that's our purpose. So we've created a common law grand jury, a unified United States common law grand jury. We've organized all of the counties in America, and we established a common law grand jury in every state. It's called a unified state common law grand jury, whatever state that might be, and each county had come together to create that. And then all the states came together to create the unified United States common law grand jury. And we've been battling in the courts now since 2016, really laying out all of the damages that has been done in our courts by the Bar Association. And, of course, ultimately the deep state or the New World Order, or whatever you want to call them. Deep state is a tool of the New World Order, of course.
And, I call them the cabal.
So we're in the courts. We have lots of papers there. And we're also trying to take the political system back. We are a common law republic, the only one in the world. I mean, there are other republics. Russia's a republic. China's a republic. Iran's a republic. There's lots of republics. But they're not true republics. A true republic is a republic that is under the common law. And the United States is the only one that is a common law republic. So we're looking to take that back. And so we've been filing papers and building a case, which has become an indictment upon the federal judiciary, and that's where we're at right now before the United States Supreme Court dealing with that problem. But meanwhile, we're organizing the committees of safety where people need to learn how to have a government by consent from the grassroots level.
Well, I have plenty of questions. I'm sure some of my audience are going to throw questions at you too, but one of my biggest pressing questions, John, is how are you going to validate this movement in the people's eyes? Have you?
Well, it's up to the people. Yeah, it's up to the people. We have a plan. We've written a book on how to create a committee of safety on a grassroots level. And building a committee, the true committee man is the committee of safety. That's what our founding fathers used in order to create this great nation. As a matter of fact, the committee of safety was created from the very beginning, the Mayflower, when they got on shore here in the Mayflower, they created the Committee of Safety, which ultimately is government by the people. And eventually, of course, we created a government, of course, in 1789. But that government needs to be controlled. So the Committees of Safety continued to control the government. What happened was, of course, the enemy was in the gates from the very beginning. They formed factions. George Washington spoke about this in great detail in his farewell address. He spent probably 2/3 of his farewell address talking about this problem and saying that parties are very dangerous to our way of our government, as far as the natural law government is concerned, and a natural law well, I guess the government, of course, is under natural law. So that's the biggest problem we have. And so they have assaulted us in from the very beginning. Actually, the Bar Association was created in the United States in 1750 while we were still colonies. And eventually, of course, we became the American Bar Association. And they continued, and the purpose of the Bar Association was to destroy our common law in the courts and bring us into civil law or Babylonian law, which would be a better name for it, it's the control of the people to enslave the people. And so that problem has been a problem from the very beginning. Our courts have been really under attack, and nothing has stopped. It still continues to this very day. In 1871, through the Organic Act, the United States was incorporated, and they kind of swept away the People's Republic and created a democracy. And that's why everybody calls us a democracy. We're not a democracy. A democracy, as Benjamin Franklin put it, was two wolves and a lamb deciding on what's happened, what they're going to have for dinner.
Yes.
And a republic is a well-armed lamb contending the vote. So that's what one of the big problems we have. But that continued on. They continued to assault us. In the very beginning, when the Constitution was being debated, the enemy was already within what we look back to see and call the Federalist Papers. But they did call themselves the Federalists. Ultimately, they were anti-common law, and there were quite a few problems in the debates. It doesn't necessarily show up in the papers, but for instance, one of the big problems that probably is in the Constitution is the three-fifths of a man, which maintained a constant white against black attitude and has caused the problem all the way up to this day. They've continued to feed into this problem. The enemy has been in for quite some time. Now, the Anti-Federalist Papers, ultimately, that was a debate that came together to try to neutralize the problems that they saw within the Constitution that wasn't that strong. And so the results of that, of course, was the Bill of Rights, which was added in 1791. And that neutralized some of the problems that might arise from these people trying to empower themselves further. The Bill of Rights is sort of a ruler or a yardstick to measure the righteousness or justice of a particular law that might be legislated. And the Bill of Rights is what has really kept us free up until this day. And as people can see today, more than ever, there is a big assault on our Bill of Rights, First and Second Amendment, especially. The battle's been here for quite some time. But the solution to lawlessness is the law. And getting the people to become educated to understand this, there is a saying that reality is the way one perceives it. And there is a shared reality in America. And that shared reality is people thinking that they are under codes and regulations, that they have to obey man-written law, which the Constitution denies that is not the case. And also that we are a democracy and we have two parties and we can't exist without the parties. This is a mindset that the people have. But true freedom will only be found when you kind of dust those things away and really just step up and realize that we're only under the law of God. That's common law. No, legislative law is referred to as equity. And that legislative law, which is equity, is referred to also as positive law or man-written law. But the purpose of that law that we gave them the authority to write under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, we gave them 18 powers to write to legislate. And the purpose of that legislation was to control the government itself, the agencies that had to operate the regulations and different codes and statutes required for that. And also to control commercial activity. In the case of the federal level, of course, it's interstate commercial activity. So they get the right regulations and controls to control that. But as far as man, he's free and independent, and he answers to no one but to himself and to God. And as long as you don't injure anybody, you can do whatever you want. All these people that go to these town courts and village courts, it's all codes. And they go there because they believe that that's the law, and they believe that they have to obey it, and they believe that they have to pay the fine or whatever it is, or accept the being incarcerated or whatever the case may be.
They're corporate codes, correct?
Actually, what they do apply upon the people, particularly, like a lot of traffic stuff, it's commercial codes. So they apply those commercial codes upon the people. I guess you can call them corporate codes in the sense that it controls commercial activity. So I guess that would be the case, unless you're looking at it from a different perception, perspective. But that is what it is. And as long as the people believe the lie, the de facto, than it is, and it has power and authority, and will continue to have power and authority until the people are able to come above it. So that's the main thinking in what common law teaches us. That's what our founding fathers spoke about. That's what the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Anti-Federalist Papers were all about, speaking about, that kind of a thing and the control of a government. The unfortunate thing is that people don't know how to have a government by consent. You know, we see a lot of people out there talking and telling people we've got to do something, but they don't know what to do. And
yeah.
Trump is working, of course, with the military to try to bring things back to where it belongs. And as he mentioned many times in his original speech when he was first elected, he was not elected to take power, but he was elected to give power back to the people where it belongs. The problem is people don't know how to take that power. That's the problem.
Correct.
They don't have a clue.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, John. The corruption, not only, it doesn't only happen in Washington, D.C., but the corruption mm-hmm. happens at the local level, at your
absolutely.
Your mayors and the people in the people at City Hall and the police departments. That's where the corruption
well, from
is,
the
in my opinion.
From the governor on down,
there's
corruption.
Yes.
From the governor on down. Many governors in many states are corrupt. Not all of them, but probably most of them. And the same thing with the legislators. They've all been paid off. They're all part of the corrupt system.
Yes.
Look, there's huge things happening. I'm sure your audience are probably aware of some of the things that are coming down soon. And, there are hundreds of thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of indictments being ready to be served. And, quite a few of them are being served on different levels. But there's going to be some major movement on that. And also there's a readiness coming down by the military to go out and deal with a lot of these people under military law because it's subversion against the United States of America.
The way I understand it, John, Donald Trump gave power to the continuity of government over to FEMA in April of 2019.
That's correct. It's called devolution.
And haven't we been under martial law since then, the past 4 years?
Well, actually, we've kind of been under martial law for a lot longer than that.
Yeah, since Lincoln.
Probably going back that far, and most presidents, or if not every president coming in, reinstates that idea, which puts them into a particular position of power that they exercise, which is all de facto and all a fraud and corrupt. So, but the thing is you're right. Donald Trump, when he became president, he kind of done the same thing but turned it around. I was just listening to a report by that guy Johnson. Are you familiar with him? That singer and military guy.
Not sure. Do you have a first name?
Huh?
Do you have a first name?
I'm trying to think of his first name.
He's a singer.
I know his last name is Johnson. He's a country or western singer. He's a military guy, and he has a lot of information on what's going on. And then, of course, there's another guy.
I know there's that.
Goodness.
I know there's a singer named McDonald. He's exposing a lot of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, no, this is a different guy. This guy gets into the military lore and all the things that have been taking place and all the symbols that have been around Trump and within the White House and throughout his administration, different orders and different things that have taken place. over 200 sheriffs, not sheriffs, but generals have gotten together and are working. Actually, it's more than that at this point, but originally it was about 200 of them working with Trump to take back the Republic. And this story is out that they were looking to do this back when they took out Kennedy because they knew what was going on there. But they were hesitant in doing that. But now that movement, of course, has changed. They have a leader, which is, of course, Donald Trump, and a lawful way to approach this and a better way to approach it in a way that the people will understand what's going on. But anyway, a lot of information out on that on the Internet, and it comes from a couple of sources. One of them is this guy Johnson. Matter of fact, there was an interview on X22. I don't know if you're familiar with X22, but X22 Report has some good news on what's happening and what's going on. And he does some interviews, and he just interviewed this guy. I think it was over the weekend.
I know about X22. Yes.
Yeah.
Are you trying to say that he's some sort of an insider with the administration or something?
Absolutely. Well, he's an insider in the sense in the military, okay? He's very, very schooled in the military law and what's going on in the military, and personally involved with conversations with people at the highest level in the military, and a lot of retired individuals that that were in the military, an ex-Marine particularly was in his 80s and. And after conversation, realizing that the time has finally come, that finally we're going to take this nation back. So the attitude has been in the military a long time. There was a order put out, an executive order put out by President Kennedy back in the early 60s, 62 or something. And through the special forces, particularly on a lower level, to put forth the idea that and the point that someday it's going to come about, but they have a duty to protect the Constitution and to protect the American way of life, and that they're not to disobey, they're not to obey any unlawful order. And that kind of a thing has been handed down from generation to generation within the service, and it's still being handed down. It's still being spoken of.
You know, I'm not going to claim that I know what the entire truth is, but I do know that Trump did not turn over the football, the nuclear codes, to Joe Biden.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, and I tend to believe it. He couldn't. You can't give those people any of that kind of power.
No, you certainly can't. But there are
might have gave him some phony suitcase and a phony a phony suitcase and
well,
phony
the codes. The suitcase stays with one man. That man stays with every president, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are a lot of people that, you've actually, I think you just said that Trump is still in control.
Oh, no doubt in my mind. Yeah. I mean, I know people may find it hard to believe. Truth is self-evident. But in order to establish the truth, you have to spend a lot of time with it. So you have to examine anything that it appears to be truth. You have to examine it. And as long as you keep examining it and it continues to be consistent, that's when you know truth. And it's a biblical principle that truth is self-evident.
Yeah.
It only takes a little while listening to the speaker to discover whether they're consistent in what they're talking about and what they're sharing.
Sure. Well, a lot of us are – I've been doing 3 years of research on this COVID crap, mm-hmm. for the lack of a better word, this COVID mm-hmm. baloney. Millions of us are not taking the shot, and we're not going to. A lot of us also know that Trump had this program he called Operation Warp Speed, and he's still pushing the vaccines to this day. I mean, I know it's a tough question.
But what you got to realize is that there was a good vaccine that came out through the developing and the research and then finally bringing it out. But what happens is, and there may be some good stuff out there, but I'm sure that's far and in between. What happens is the pharmaceutical companies, of course, once they started producing it, made changes in that. And therein was the problem. Now, I don't know that he's still pushing it now, but I know he was pushing it for quite some time because it was a good, solid potential, but it was never really needed.
I can attest to, at least back into late last year, November and December, some of his rallies, he still was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, that's something that, again, may be deficient in that particular problem. I can't understand why he would be, but look at a lot of the stuff was pushed out there, and who would ever think that they'd put poison in it? I mean, they've been poisoning our water, they've been poisoning our food, they've made us addicted to sugar, and that is a major problem. People don't realize how dangerous and how bad sugar is, and it's in everything.
Almost. Yes, it is. Yeah.
And it's very addicting. I think sugar is as addicting as nicotine.
Well,
it is extremely addictive.
It's the most addictive substance in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that that's true. Yeah. So, but anyway, National Liberty Alliance, for the people who don't know, it's nationallibertyalliance.org. We have people should come out and take a look. If they go through our front page and just watch the videos and read through that front page, they'll understand exactly what we're doing and what our plan is. We have a mission statement up there, but now we're changing that into a charter. We've got 10,700 plus members last time I looked. So we're building up, we're getting ready, we're updating our website, getting ready for critical mass. We'll be going out on a lot of interviews, hopefully in the coming weeks and months, and to get the message out. But we do have lots of courses out there, lots of free courses. We have a civics course. We have an introduction to the Constitution course. We have a study where people go and just watch a lot of videos. It really brings people up to par on a lot of different things. And then we have a government by consent course. That course, we ask that people be premium members to join that course. And a premium member is someone that is given $5 a month or more to support us. We have a jury administrators course, because we're looking to install jury administrators in every courthouse, every state courthouse in America, in order to bring back the common law. It never was that the government should have any control in any way in calling for a jury and trying to seek an indictment. The way it's always been is the people have called the juries together, or the sheriff would call the juries together, or a coroner would call. The only two people that could really call them is the sheriff and the coroner, and the people themselves. And so when a jury is called, then, of course, you bring the evidence to the jury to seek an indictment, and the people either agree or disagree, and that's the end of that. But prosecutors go in, and, of course, they get the ham sandwich because they take control of the jury, and they build them up with a lot of lies, and they're all stacked through questionnaires. They stack the juries for the different cases. But it was never meant to be that prosecutors would ever go and talk to a jury. That's not the process. It wasn't until the early 70s, when the U.S. attorneys got legislative powers to call for a grand jury. Prior to that, they couldn't. So it's really the sheriff that's supposed to do that. So if a prosecutor sees that there's a crime and wants to see if they can get an indictment, they need to go to the sheriff and give their evidence to the sheriff, who would then look at that, maybe do a little more research or investigation, and then make a decision on whether he thinks he should bring it to the jury or not. But at least then it would be an unbiased presentment to the jury on what's up, and the people would be able to make that proper decision on indictment or not. And a similar thing is with the trial jury. The trial jury is supposed to make the decision not only on the facts of the case, but also decide the law and the penalty. And the penalty that the jury is to have a view on is an iron restitution. The way the court system works right now, they may take everything a person owns. They may convict an individual, take all everything they own, fine them, take their money out of the bank, whatever it is. And then it goes into their pockets, really, into the state. And it's distributed in ways, however all that corruption works. That's not the way it's supposed to be, because the victim is always left outside in the cold. At the end of the day, they get nothing. There's no restitution. There's no restoring the person. So, but common law doesn't really focus too much on jail, or sometimes that's necessary for very violent people. Common law is mostly about restitution. You steal a man's ox, you got to give him back three. That's
yes.
kind of the yes. idea. It's a biblical principle.
What common law is, do no harm, is what common law is.
Well, that is the primary thing. Do no harm. As long as you harm nobody, you've committed no crime. In order for there to be crime, there must be an injured party. If there is no injured party, there is no crime. I mean, people go to jail even for murder or where there is no intent and they haven't proven intent. Common law requires the proof of intent. If you can't prove intent, you can't get a conviction. The jury must set that person free.
Explain that a little more, could you please?
Well, yeah, I'll give you an example. And this is an actual case took place a couple of years ago. And I've heard of cases similar to this before. There was a case where a woman went into town or whatever the case may be, had a young baby with them, left the baby in the back seat of the car with the windows closed, went in shopping and then went in doing other things and forgot all about the fact that they had the baby with them. And then realized that when they went back to the car, they found that the baby died. Now, that woman was arrested and tried, I think, for manslaughter. I don't recall the particular thing, but it's a murder charge. And she was found guilty. But the fact of the matter is there was no intent there. It was an accident. And I would imagine, and I'm sure any reasonable, rational person would imagine, that the penalty for her stupidity is in the death of the child alone. I mean, that's got to be heart-wrenching, number one, something very difficult to live with for the rest of your life. I mean, God's already made that punishment. There's no need for the government to step in. But the bottom line is they could not prove intent. And if you can't prove intent, that's it. It's done. So you have to have a well-informed jury. You know, I've written quite a few books. I wrote a book, Government by Consent. It's available on Amazon. You can order it through my website if you want. I also wrote a book, Court Access in the Common Law, which we also have an ongoing live course right now going on that. And that's a very in-depth course teaching people the true law and teaching people how due process works in the court, how it goes through from the beginning of your petitions all the way through all the different motions and different arguments that take place on the paper. And then eventually, once all that's done, then you have the trial. So we're educating people on how that works if they're interested. And I think everyone should learn this. We're planning on bringing these things into the schools, teach our children, because right now they're being raised as communists. But anyway, I also wrote a couple of books, one for the grand jury and one for the petit jury. And it really is a jury that really frees them to understand what their powers and authority is, to have fully informed juries with the power of nullification. Because what people need to understand, and they don't understand, if you are in a court where a particular statute is applied and the people do not agree with that statute, then they can nullify it. And there are cases where statutes are lawfully applied in a court. For instance, if an individual is working for a government agency and violated the law, well, they're under statutes, codes, and regulations, and they apply to them in that court case. Same thing with individuals who are involved in commercial activities. And if they break the commercial, you know, maybe break a statute or regulation or something, they face a consequence. And some of those consequences could end up being criminal. And therefore, those statutes are laws that can be applied against them, and rightly so, because it controls their activities. And we gave Congress the authority to write those kind of laws, only those kind of laws. And so a jury can look at a case and decide, well, we don't like that statute. We don't think it's right, so we nullify it. We're not going to hold that against the person in consideration of the case. A jury can also take a look at a situation where someone maybe stole some food or something. And then they, you know, as you go into the case, you realize, well, you know, the person was really trying to survive and they had a child maybe or whatever the case may be. And even though it's a wrongdoing, you know, people kind of can reasonably realize that, and they wouldn't hold much against that person in the way of any kind of an enforcement, especially not sending them to jail or anything like that. You know, right now the court system is all about putting people in jail because there's money to be made in the court case itself. The lawyers are making all this money. The court system is raking in money and more money from the state and federal government. The jails are built, and that's a money-making deal, too. The more people in jail, the more money involved, the more money's thrown at it. And there's a lot of corruption in all these things, so people are lining their pockets. You know, we're in a really bad shape, you know, morally-wise. And the people who are running our governments, you know, most of them are corrupt.
Yeah, yeah, this this country's in terrible shape. I have a scenario. Are communities combating the illegalities of police forces? Local police forces, are they using their sheriffs in a way to stop these corporate atrocities?
Well, you know, we were just discussing today some of the strategies that we're putting in play and establishing in a more detailed way. The reason why you got a lot of police forces is mostly because of a town or a village. They want to make more money, so they want to have a court. So they create a court, and it's called the Nisi Prius Court, and it's not a court of law. And so these court systems, they'll hear cases. Mostly commercial cases, code violations. And it could be a code violation about your home or something, your property. It could be a code violation for, you know, speeding or passing a light, whatever the case may be. So they do that, and the people believe they're under those laws, and they think they need those laws. But people have common sense. They stop at a light. Maybe they go when there's nobody there. That's fine, you know. Hey. But the thing is that's all for commercial activities, okay? But what they make a lot of money out of that. And therefore, once they do that, they now want to get a police force because they want to get people into their court system there. They want to get people on the locale. They also take the people in, maybe if you're on a highway or something and you're passing through a particular town and they pass that over to that town. And there's a sharing of the money of this. The state gets some money. The town gets some money. So they kind of break it up and they will get a piece of the action. Of course, the town gets the biggest, the lion's share of the money of the fines and stuff like that. And if the people became wise to that and understood that they don't have to pay these fines, that this has nothing to do with them, and they learn how to step up in court and challenge a jurisdiction and then move it into federal court for cause should they not obey the law because they don't have personam jurisdiction, then it becomes, you turn it around, it becomes a lawsuit, and you sue those individuals for violating your right of due process, bringing you into jurisdictions unknown and not setting you free. You can get quite a bit of money out of that, each violation against each officer in that court. And in the process of time, once you do something like that or come close to it, they back off and they leave you alone at that point, at least because they know you're in that town, you're a problem to them. But the thing is that, you know, once the people realize the power and the authority that they have, and then there's a process to deal with this unlawful process, because the solution to lawlessness is the law itself. So once they understand that and it gets out enough where the people stop participating and giving their money up and giving up their liberty if they're being put into jail, and sheriffs start resisting and saying, hey, wait, when the town court sends someone here to be incarcerated, I can't incarcerate them because that's not a court of law and they need to let them free. Once that kind of thing happens, and that's what we're trying to bring out, that's what we have to establish, committees of safety in every single county. We have to educate our sheriffs. We have to educate even the local governments. But once that happens, then they fall apart for attrition because they don't have the money coming in. They don't. Their police force falls apart because they can't support it. Now, they do get money from the state, maybe even some from the federal government. But the lion's share of that money coming in comes in from the court system that they set up. All this starts to fall apart on them. The courts fall apart. They close down. The police forces will start to disintegrate. And then, of course, we'll need to expand sheriffs as that kind of a situation takes place. So the monies that have been going from the state, or even some federal monies that come, that would go to these police forces, and then would go to the sheriffs, which then they can expand themselves somewhat. But remember, sheriffs are not code enforcers, they're law enforcers. Police officers are code enforcers. Actually, they can't even make a true arrest. The arrest actually takes place when the sheriff takes control of them, ultimately. But they make ultimately what's called a citizen's arrest. They may have the paper looking nice and looking official and so on, but the truth of the matter, it's still a citizen's arrest. But once they fall apart and the sheriff expands the office and people fall under the common law, things will change. But we also have a responsibility with that. We have to become more morally minded. We have to bring morality back into our schools. We have to teach our children the right way of life. We have to teach them about the Constitution, them about our founding fathers, who we are as a people, and what our heritage. And our heritage is in the law, okay? And our liberty is the inheritance. But if you don't know the law, you can't truly know your true liberties, nor can you protect your liberties. And so, again, we get always back to law. You have to know the law. We're a people of law. That's what a republic is. We're a law-abiding people. And that's that, you know, the Constitution is the law. And in the preamble of the Constitution that we the people wrote, we the people ordained and established that law for the United States of America. In other words, for all of the state governments and for all of the and for the federal government, we established the law. So we're above the Constitution. They're below it. They can't write no law to control our behaviors. That job belongs to you and me. But when you when you injure an individual, then you become liable. And if it's a criminal injury, then, of course, it could be a criminal action. But again, the focus by the grand jury, which needs to come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy at the end of the day, if they think it's necessary, they have to consider these facts. But at the end of the day, they get to decide what the penalty is. And the penalty must be with an eye on the focus of the restitution of the individual in that court that has been injured. And that's where true justice is. And that's where we got to get back to. So anyway, we're working to deal with that. We know that all of this stuff, all these statutory processes, all that will fall apart once the committees of safety start to build power and spread out the knowledge of the truth within their counties. You know, we have 3,133 counties, and we intend on creating committees of safety in all 3,000-plus counties. And that's when the people will start to have government by consent take control of their courts. You know, the court system is not supposed to have a judge in it. If a person is being charged with anything, there's no judge. Okay. If it's criminal, there's no judge. There's a tribunal. And the tribunal is the people, free and independent, unadulterated by the words or the statutes that might come out of the mouth of that judge. They can ignore anything the judge says. So they have to be a fully informed jury. So we wrote a book for both of these cases, for the grand jury and the trial jury, to free them. I mean, the books, the handbooks themselves is enough to really free any individual and understand the true powers and the authorities of we the people.
Art.
And we wrote numerous other books. I wrote about 12 or 13 books altogether. Most of them are handbooks, two major books that maxed out on its pages. So it's very hefty books, 8.5 by 11, very large. And hardcovers and relatively inexpensive. You know, books that I sell would be, people on the internet selling this type of book would be, you know, getting 80, 90, 100 bucks. You know, we're down far less than that. We're selling it as cheap as we can because really we want to get the message out. We're not interested in making the money, with the exception of making money to support, you know, the what we're doing. And those books go to support what we're doing right now.
Are you?
Yep.
Are you able to get common law juries into these, well, I call them kangaroo courts, and they're nothing but?
Well, the only known free and independent grand jury, grand jury, let's say at this point in time, is the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. It is possible that there might be a free and independent grand jury by a righteous judge. I haven't met a righteous judge, by the way, yet. But I'm sure they might be out there. And if they are, then they would make sure that the jury is free and independent and fully informed with the power and the authority of nullification of law. But I haven't seen that anywhere. So it doesn't mean it's not there, though. We have been in the courts. We've been in the federal courts since 2016, when we started to file our first papers, and we filed numerous papers, numerous indictments, numerous writ mandamuses, and we filed a quo warranto, and a quo warranto really brings it back to the potential loss of their offices. They have to come up with their oath, their bonds, and their financials, and they have 10 days to do that. If they fail to do that, then they give up their office. They have to step off the seat that they're sitting in. Now, of course, and there is law to enforce that. Now, we haven't been able to get to that point yet because the courts are corrupt. But what we've been doing is really, since 2016, everything we've done, we've helped people with losing their homes, non-judicial foreclosures, whether it be for mortgages, for tax foreclosures, or whatever the case may be, and various other cases, and again, habeas corpuses. Some of them have been freed, and some people have been able to get their homes, removed from the system so their homes aren't taken. But in most cases, that's not the case. But we've been taking all this into the federal courts for cause, for denial of due process of the people, for violating their rights, their rights, and ultimately taking their property without a warrant, a lawful warrant, and of course habeas corpuses. They have 3 days to respond, and when you go to a federal judge and you bring it to them, and they don't do anything about it, well then they just committed a crime. So we now just, our last papers we filed was an indictment on the federal judiciary. And we've got plenty of proof because that's what all these cases were about. We've got hundreds of cases. And all of these cases were all about showing the fact that there's no justice in our courts, that they're not obeying the law, that they're stealing from the people. People are not getting due process. And they're all doing the same thing, no matter where they're at, whether you're in a federal court that's across the nation in California or a federal court in New York or in Texas or Montana or whatever it is. They're all operating the same way, all coming down with the same decisions, all denying the same thing. And that proves conspiracy. So that's where we're at right now. We also made contact, one-way contact, with NORCOM. Which is the military responsible for the protection of North America. And we know that the Brunson case did the same thing, and they got them for enforcement. We heard sort of behind the scenes that there is conversation going on between the military and the United States Supreme Court, and that's NORCOM. They're doing the communicating because we're trying to bring these courts back under the law again. So we sent all of our information, all of our evidence, and all of our communications with the United States, between us and the federal courts, and now the United States Supreme Court, and we sent it to them for enforcement. And we do expect at some point in time they're going to enforce all this stuff. So it's not that what we're doing is worthless. Some people don't see, the fruits of the labor. They think it's not working. Well, that's not true. They have to get some patience. They have to realize how big this situation is, how serious the problem is, how corrupt it is. And so therefore, we have to have patience. But we're very close. And I hope we're very close. I don't know that we're going to be able to really continue much longer the way the economy is going and a lot of things are going to be happening. Something big is over the horizon. And again, I think it's extremely close. It's going to be biblical, literally. And it's going to blow a lot of people's minds when they discover what's really been going on. You know, there's an investigator, Norman Dodd. He was the chief investigator for the Reese Committee back in the 50s.
I've heard of it.
And his job was to investigate all of the different trusts, for instance, the Rockefeller's trusts and different things. And what they discovered when they got into the archives to look at things, they saw the how big this thing is. This is a huge, huge conspiracy. It involves millions, maybe millions, but definitely over a million people at this point that are involved in this conspiracy. And again, we spoke about that a little while ago. It's corruption all the way down into our towns and village courts.
Well,
and systems.
It's
but anyway, there was a woman working with him, and she was she thought that all of these different organizations were doing good things. Okay. So she came in very unbiased. As a matter of fact, she leaned towards them. Hey, what do these people do? Great work. They do good things. Anyway, she did most of the research, and she came out with such great fear. She's almost lost her mind, we're told. So that's how bad it is. That's how frightening it is to see the monster sort of behind the veil, a Leviathan. As the Bible calls it.
Well, once you see something, you can't unsee it. That was one question I wanted to ask you. What sort of catalytic event put you in this direction?
I'm sorry. What brought me into this?
Yeah. What was the catalytic event that?
It was the IRS. The IRS came out to me in the 90s, and so I was trying to figure out what to do with these people, and I started looking into the Constitution and trying to figure things out, and I discovered that they were unlawful, that there were no direct taxes to be applied upon the heads of the people, and I thought, well, okay, I can beat these people with the Constitution. Of course, you can't. The courts are corrupt, and so on and so forth. But only by God's mercy, I've been able to stay one step ahead of these people. And then finally, when they really came down strong upon me, I had accumulated enough knowledge. I had joined up with We the People, run by Robert Schultz. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I was involved with him. And then eventually, as time went on, the Tea Parties and the Ron Paul movement first, and the Tea Parties. And then we moved into the Committee Man process. Discovered how that works and the problems with that. And eventually we came to, really the grand jury is the solution to this whole thing. There's a case out there, U.S. against Williams. There was a case that was, the decision was written up by Anton Scalia. And it was a very powerful, powerful decision. It's a total education, that case. I mean, anybody who reads that, the whole thing he lays out the liberty and the freedoms and the power and the authority of the grand jury, unadulterated, untainted, and no one can say anything. He refers to it as a kind of a fourth branch of government. So it was very powerful, and that's what moved us into National Liberty Alliance and became a national group where we built up a presence in every state, in many counties in every state, and have grown pretty decently and ready for, like I said, critical mass coming up. But anyway, that's where I started. And some years back, they finally kind of locked on to me. And I think I was heading towards jail potentially, because that's what they like to do, people who resist. And what happened was my knowledge had increased to a point that I understood the game. And I also understood strategies. And one thing I learned, I've been in the construction field and had worked with lawyers on different cases, the difference to, arguments between contractors or developers and things like that. And I learned some strategies from him, this one lawyer. And one of the things I learned was that, if you sue everybody that potentially can come out after you, they can't do nothing. So when I realized that, I sued the sheriff, I sued the county clerk, I sued the two agents that were coming out after me and giving me a hard time. I sued the commissioner of the IRS. I didn't sue any government.
Are you talking
just
about
the people?
In civil court?
Just the people. Oh, no, federal court. I sued them all. I took them all into federal court. And because they were ready to come after me, they served a 7-day notice of seizures and everything. But then I executed the strategy I had learned from this lawyer. For instance, there was a contractor that I was hired out by in order to do some construction management for him. We were doing heavy construction, and in that process ran into a problem with the developer, and they didn't pay, and he was owed a lot of money. And so I started negotiating some of the problems out and trying to move them. You know, we admitted to certain problems, but again, getting back to kind of the lion's share of the problem was them. So it ended up in court. And so he was being the contractor that was, had this contract. I had a lot of subcontractors working for them, suppliers, and they were all owed a lot of money, and they were coming out after him because that's who they had the agreement with. So when I had a meeting with the lawyer and the contractor, he says, well, okay, we're going to sue everybody. And the contractor said, well, I don't want to sue these people. These people are my friends. He said, but you're on the board, you're about to go bankrupt, and they're about to come out after you with everything. You got to do it. So he agreed, and he sued everybody. And of course, you know, he didn't take anything from those people. He just wanted to tie him up in the court, because once you tie him up in the court, they can't do nothing. Their hands are tied. So if I sue the sheriff can't come out and serve anything upon me as far as trying to take the money out, especially when the case is involved in the case I'm suing him in, which was an IRS case. Okay, so, but anyway, that was a strategy I learned, put them all at bay, and then, I was able to go through the process. And one of the things I discovered, I went down the rabbit holes, you know, they give you codes. They say you have authority to do this. They have authority to do that. And they give you a code. But people don't read the codes. The lawyers don't even read the codes. Because I read the codes, and the codes lead you down a rabbit hole. And as you go down the rabbit hole, you discover these tax systems has nothing to do with we the people. It has to do with people on farms, people that are dealing with, fuels, maybe jet fuels or even just regular fuel. And it's identified with the taxes with that, and also with weapons, as far as, the IRS dealing with the guns, the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. So it all is around that. That's what it all circles around. So once I discovered that, I was able to lay that out in the court. They didn't want to hear anything anymore. And all of a sudden, we didn't have any more court hearings. And then I got a letter from the IRS, which was an apology letter. And I got a release of lien. And I was told I wasn't liable for taxes during those years. Well, it was, the solution is in the law, okay? And even with their law, to some degree, they had to hide it in a way. United States Supreme Court had made rulings that the 16th Amendment added nothing new. It just put everything back to where it belongs, because direct taxes are unlawful. And a direct tax is anything upon an individual that is direct. You could be taxed through a product. You buy a product and there's tax on that product. Well, you can decide whether you want to buy that or not, pay that tax. Food's not supposed to be taxed. Clothing isn't supposed to be taxed.
Well, this lays me
most states.
This lays me into a question. Were you able to disprove this alleged authority that they have over us?
Well, the thing is I took it as far as to get them off of my back, to be in safety, because I felt I was in a position to go to jail. I also initiated the court case so that they wouldn't, because they would make it criminal. I took it civil. So I was the plaintiff, and there's more power in being a plaintiff than the defendant. So all of those things working together was able to free me. But no, if you go in, they use my case, because what happened is the case just fell apart and they left it alone. I don't know what they did with the papers I filed in there. I don't know what they did with some solutions, but they actually make it look as if I lost and as if and that case is used against other people, which is kind of strange, but that's what's going on, we have, I worked with Robert Schultz on some other things, on a case in the IRS. He was doing a case directly. He did a case against the IRS directly, but he had another member who was a founding member of We the People, and he's doing a case. And as a matter of fact, they just got thrown out of the court, stating the 16th Amendment gives them the power. But they were challenging the power and the authority. I had a case with the same individual that I was doing, and I collaborated with Robert Schultz on this, and we're in court. So there's two cases going in right now at the same time, and they're trying to throw us out on a different kind of a feature. We're not suing directly the agency. We're suing the individuals who abused their authority, stepped outside of their powers and jurisdiction, and assault us in a sense, not in a physical way, but assault us with the law, and require and commanding us to pay, you know, the tax. So it's a different battle. So there was no real, conclusion concerning the IRS, again, directly, because, again, I was going after individuals. And I'm doing the same thing with this person. So he's got one going in against the IRS and one going in after the individuals. And we took it into the state court, which is where it belongs. The U.S. attorney pulled it into the federal court, which they always do. We're trying to push it back into the state because they don't have the power, the authority over us, because we're not suing the government agency. So, and the United States Supreme Court has ruled that once an agent steps outside of their powers and authority, they lose all protection of the state, and they can't claim any kind of protection. They
right.
can't claim that they have any kind of immunity to the situation.
Right.
So it's a whole different ball game, and it's a different color of things. And that's the argument I'm going through now with them in court.
You just mentioned the word color. I've heard this.
Color of law. Huh?
Color of law, yes.
Yeah.
That's what they're working under, isn't it? It's a
well,
sort of a semantic.
Yes, they do what they want under the color of law, and of course, they're presumptuous to that. And they don't really know what they're doing anyway, you know. They're just working and executing what they're being told to execute. And that's why I sued the commissioner of the IRS commissioner, because he's the pinnacle of the whole thing. He's the appointed guy. He's the one that took the oath. And he's the one, he knows exactly what these people are doing. He knows the process that they're using, you know, sort of the policies and procedures.
Yes.
And so he's liable.
Yes.
So anyway, going back into National Liberty Alliance, though, you know, we're looking to educate people and empower them. And we have a very powerful program. Anybody really wants to understand exactly what we're doing to very great detail, all they need to do is go up and read our front page and watch the videos on the front page. I did a seminar, and that seminar is a 3-hour-plus seminar. And it's posted right on our front page, so people can watch it at their leisure. And you'll get the big picture of who we are, what we're doing, and by what power and what authority. We're working off the common law. There's nothing that we write that we don't fill a page up with footnotes. Everything we write, we put authorities in and footnotes coming into the common law, going back into our founding fathers, our founding documents. And the law of the land, you know, which extends a little beyond, of course, the Constitution. But the application of the law against these people is what we're doing. And again, we're not expecting to win on this side of devolution. But we do know that we're going to win once devolution takes play. This is going to play itself out on the other side of things.
Have you ever heard of a man named Alfred Adask?
No.
Okay. He did his own podcast for quite a few years, but I heard he had a stroke about 5-6 years back, and he's not able to do it anymore. I heard him on Alex Jones first, and then I got a hold of him, and I had him on my podcast. Mm-hmm. What his story basically was he was being bullied by his locals, too. He was being fined $25,000 a day for non-compliance of whatever was going on at the time, and he
some kind of a code on property.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Some kind of a code or a regulation.
That's an easy case to deal with.
Yeah. Well, what he actually did was he beat it in a way. Is he studied their own laws, and it turns out that a lot of these laws are made in a way that portrays us as being animals and monsters. I believe that.
They refer to us as chattel, livestock.
Yeah, their own definition of the word human is sea animal or sea monster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way.
Well, look, the easiest way to deal with these things is to challenge the jurisdiction wherever the law is being applied. And when they and once jurisdiction is challenged, it has to be decided, which means it has to be a hearing, which means that the prosecutor, if there's a prosecutor in there, has to show that there is jurisdiction. And your challenge of the jurisdiction, you show that there is, they don't have jurisdiction.
Right.
And in that process of that challenge, then the judge needs to make a decision on what's before, you know. But any time I've seen this done and any time I kind of went up against these people, the judge would always say, well, I decided I have jurisdiction. Well, where did the argument take place? Where did the hearing take place? You know, where's the other side? You got my paper, and it's my paper is the only paper in the court, so therefore my paper rules the court, and it's an affidavit form, and therefore you have to rule on that. And if you rule on that alone, I win. But, you know, they won't give up jurisdiction very easy. So then you have to, you know, threaten them with what's called a quo warranto inside the courtroom. And a quo warranto is a paper, it's a writ that is the power and the authority of the people. And it's a writ to require them to produce their oaths, their bonds, and their financials. Right there, that brings fear into their hearts at that moment, because they got 10 days to do that. And then you can pull their bond. And then you have an administrative, process that goes on from the damage that the judge had done upon you. And it's an easy case to prove because, as you mentioned, in the law itself and using the law, using the Constitution, you can prove these cases. But the bottom line is then you move it to federal court for cause and you sue all the officers of that court for denying you a right of due process. So you have two cases going on at the same time. Okay. And usually last time I was in a town court and they tried like heck to get me to plead or something, and they tried to reduce the fine and all that. And I said, no, you're not hearing me. I'm not coming. You guys want to do this? I'm not coming back into this court no more. I'm done. I've given you my papers. You know the story. You've read them. And that's it. You want me to come back? I'm not coming back. I'm going to then move this to federal court for cause and sue everybody. And then the prosecutor and the judge went on the side and started talking. They came back and they dismissed the case. So, you know, there are some you don't really get to win these cases on the record. So that's problematic because then other people could use them. But you can win these cases. But again, if you don't know the law, you can't defend your liberty and you can't know your liberty. I mean, people think they got to pay taxes. People think they got to pay taxes on their home. Well, if you got to pay taxes on your home and you don't pay it and they take your house away, you never owned it, did you? You know, that's a direct tax. You can't tax a person's property. That's unlawful in common law. And that's what they've done. They've enslaved the people that way. Anyway, these are the things that the people need to learn and know and execute. And again, on the other side of devolution, it will be a slam dunk for our side to be able to go into these courts. And everybody should know how to defend themselves. We need to teach our children in school not only how to defend themselves in a court, but how to defend themselves in life. We need to teach them how to fire a weapon, how to handle a handgun, how to handle a rifle, and even a shotgun. We need to teach our children how to drive in school. These are the things that is incumbent upon us to teach our children. And this is what we're going to be teaching down onto the county levels. Each committee of safety, you know, you start to grow up, you start with 10 people, 20 people, 100 people, and who knows, the sky's the limit. You're going to have 1,000 people. But once you get into the coming up onto 100 people, at that point, you'd be broken up into many subcommittees. You'd have a committee of correspondence, which corresponds between, you know, with National Liberty Alliance for educational purposes and organizational purposes. But then also county to county and issues that affect the different counties, even state to state, going right up into the federal level or down or to the state level, or just the county level itself and the towns and the school boards and all those things. So you have different committees. You have an educational committee, and the job of the educational committee, and we're teaching people how to do these things. Educational committee, for instance, they would then be responsible for visiting the different school districts and pushing forward the requirement of teaching civics in school, teaching a proper education, and none of this woke stuff and the crazy, you know, the communistic stuff.
Because they
don't even know who George Washington is. It's that bad.
That's what I was going to get into. It's going to come pretty soon. People are coming to a
You could take control of a board very simply. Okay, you see, one of the things the Committee of Safety does, you develop a relationship with your sheriff. Well, you do a charter. Every Committee of Safety writes a charter, which we wrote the framework for it already. Every Committee of Safety sets forth resolutions, which we wrote the framework for that also. So, and we wrote a handbook on how to form a committee of safety in your county, from step one, the two people coming together, having coffee, discussing the issues, all the way to the point of empowering yourself and having subcommittees and taking control of every single government that touches your county or your town. And then you go to the boards. Once you have the sheriff on board, and there's a process, you know, how to woo the sheriff into the process, because you give him a copy of your resolutions and your charter, which you file with the county clerk. So it's sealed and you have the recording. And then you put this into a book form and you bind it in Staples or Office Max or someplace. Then you take it to the sheriff on your first meeting. Once you started the form and you had your presentation of the Committee of Safety and you come to your first meeting, now you're going to make an arrangement to talk with the sheriff. So go out and talk with the sheriff. You make it a 5-minute appointment. You're not going to take up much of his time. And basically, it's to let them know, hey, look, we're concerned people in the county, but we've got lots of problems. I'm sure you realize that. And so we're coming together, and we formed what's called the Committee of Safety. And we'd like to give you a copy of our charter and our resolutions. And we'd like to invite you to our meeting in the next month or two. We'll give you a call, and maybe the next month or two you come down and we'll talk. And then you give them a copy of the book, Government by Consent. So the sheriff's going to at least breeze through the book. And if he breezes through the book, I got to believe he's going to be so excited about it, he's going to read the book once he understands what's in that book. You know, we did a whole chapter on the power and the authority of the sheriff. But anyway, once that is established and you establish that kind of a relationship with the sheriff, and then the sheriff comes to your first meeting, he sees you as growing. Maybe you have 30 people there, maybe you have 50 people there. Who knows how many numbers of people you have. But he now sees that he's got potential backers, potential supporters, and you're empowering him with the common law, and that should be seen. So now, once you get them on the sheriff on board, and if you don't get the sheriff on board, then you recall him. And we teach how to do that also. You got to get rid of him, got to get another guy. But anyway, once you get the sheriff on board, you let it be known. Hey, look, we want to work with you. If you ever need posse comitatus executed, we're here, you know. And you should be working with the rod and gun clubs and so on and so forth, getting them involved. But anyway, once you make that connection, then you let the sheriff know, hey, look, we'd like to have you at each of our meetings. We know you're a busy guy and maybe you can't make it here, but send one of your deputies. You need to know what we're doing, and we'd like to get your input and thoughts and want to be very lawful about what we're doing. So that's the attitude, and you build that up. Once you do that, okay, there's a couple of ways to do this thing with the school board. You can go without a sheriff, but the power of having a sheriff or a sheriff's deputy with you is extremely powerful. So you have one speaker focusing on all the problems to bring it before the board at their meeting, and you lay it out, and you give them the orders to say, you know, we're the people. We ordained and established the Constitution. We've given you your jobs. We're the boss. We don't like what you're doing. We want you to stop this, 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 and this. And we want you to execute this, 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 and this. Now you get an attitude from the people because they think that they got some power and authority and whatever. So you get an attitude. That's fine. Then you pull out of your back pocket. You give it to the sheriff and serve on them what's called a notice and demand. And now everyone up there, the elected board, has to produce their oaths, their bonds, and their financials. And you're going to take money away from them because they're breaking the law. It's very simple. I mean, you're not going to the courts now. You're going to people. You're going to an insurance agency. So you're going to pull their bond, and that'll be money to come in to help feed the necessities and the overhead of the committees of safety, of course. You're going to remove these people from office. If they don't respond within 10 days, then there is a process to remove them from their position. Now there's a vacancy. And if there's a vacancy, until that is filled by a by an election, which will take time, you can claim the chair. You can claim the office. And so you can fill the seats yourself and start executing what is right. So this is a legal process. It's powerful. It's doable right now. And we're teaching those kind of things. So and this works with every single government agency you can think of, whether you're going up to talk to the county government or you're talking to the town government or the village government or to the state government or to the federal government. You know, again, on the federal government, of course, you have to be collectively working with other states. And that's where the committees of correspondence come in, because we're teaching the people to keep those communication lines open. And wherever you have problems that are common to other people's problems, you want to get together, start discussing solutions and make a plan and execute that plan and take back control on whatever it is that you're working together on. So that could be county to county and it could be state to state. We have to, there's a lot of work we need to do when we get our people back into Congress. I mean, I think by the end of devolution, we're going to find probably more than 2/3 of Congress in jail or hanging at the end of a short rope.
Hopefully.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Do you know of a former Northern Indiana sheriff? His name is Brad Rogers. Do you know of his story?
No, I don't.
It was maybe, I'm thinking probably the mid-2000s. 2007, 2006, somewhere in that area. He's in Northern Indiana. He has the Amish community that is under his control, and there was an Amish farmer that was being harassed by the FDA for selling raw milk. And the farmer went to...
Oh, yeah, I heard this story.
Yeah, the farmer went to the sheriff and told the FDA if they ever come back, he was going to arrest them.
Hmm.
And they never came back and harassed that farmer.
Well, I heard this story, I believe. I know that there's been a couple of situations with people trying to, you know, sell raw milk, and people don't understand the problem with pasteurized milk. I don't know if people realize they pasteurize your orange juice, too.
Oh, yes.
So if you think you're getting your vitamin C there, you're not.
Yeah.
Well, so it eliminates the milk. It eliminates the vitamin D in milk.
Yes, it does.
So and then you're not getting your vitamin D.
And then you put... And then they put synthetic vitamin D, synthetic chemicals back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what they do, but they are poisoning us everywhere. They've turned everything upside down. So,
I've also. But
anyway, we do have solutions for all this. The solution to lawlessness is in the law, and that's what we teach. And if people don't have the law, they can't know their heritage and they can't really completely exercise their unalienable right that they of inheritance with the liberties that they have. Once you realize that government has no control over my person in any way, shape, or form, and they can't apply any law upon me. I'm under common law. That's the law of God. Do no harm. End of subject.
Well, there are millions of people that don't need to be governed, but I'm sure that there are quite a few millions that do need to be governed because they just can't control themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, look at the problem is education, and we have a lot of lost children out there right now. They don't know which way is up and down. They don't know what sex they are. You have the woke thing going through the schools. When I was a kid, I remember hearing people talk about corrupting the morals of a minor. And that was something applied upon people. And clearly our children in school, they're being corrupted. And their morals are being corrupted. So that needs to be exercised and resurrected and pushed. But again, you know, we're dealing in courts that are evil. Not the court itself, of course. There's nothing wrong with our government. There's nothing wrong with the structure. There's nothing wrong with the agencies. And there's nothing wrong with most legislation. I'd say 99.9% of the legislation is, maybe less than that, because you do have certain bills that have been brought out that are huge problems. But let's say 90% of the legislation is proper. So everything is in place. The problem is it's being controlled by criminals. That's the problem. And so, of course, we need to take it back. And we're in the process of taking it back. It's going to be huge. There's going to be a great fear that's going to come down upon this nation. People are going to be frightened because of what's happening, and they're not going to understand what's happening. As a matter of fact, well, I was just listening to some things today that it's pretty frightening.
Well, you know,
there is a scare of course, nuclear war. I don't believe in any way that that's going to happen, but the scare is there and it's going to grow, and it's going to be very frightening for people, but it has to happen. We have to get to that point.
Yes. Yes. You know, if this does come to fruition, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look back and say, oh, all these conspiracy theorists, they turned out being right.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, every conspiracy, you know, every takeover anywhere in the world since it began, there's always a conspiracy that takes down this government or that government or this situation or that law or whatever. You know, it's always a conspiracy. But people don't realize that. And again, people are ignorant, and they're ignorant because they were made ignorant. They didn't get a proper education. Especially a proper education like Jefferson spoke about. You can get that at nationallibertyalliance.org. But they didn't get a proper education. They don't understand things. And they've been sold a lot of bad stuff. And so they believe a lot of bad things. But I really feel really bad for the kids in school today, because they're the one that's being the most destroyed. I mean, they've been wearing masks, for instance, for quite some time, especially the young kids. I mean, that is so destructive, and it causes a lot of medical problems, some that people will be stuck with for the rest of their life. And yes. So that in itself is a problem. But they're being taught immorality and not morality. They're being taught communism and not republicanism, if you want to call it that, who we are as a people. They're not being taught who our founding fathers are. They're not being taught anything worthwhile anything. You know, and other kids, they're dumbed down, and then the news media and the entertainment system, they all help to feed into that whole process, and we're in trouble. It's up to the people to fix this problem, because there's no military that's going to fix this problem. There's no Donald Trump that's going to fix this problem. Yeah, they can seize it, they can give it back to the American people, but the American people, plain and simple, has no clue on what to do. Well, and nobody knows what to tell them to do. Well, therein is nationallibertyalliance.org.
That's the big issue that I have. For so many years, they say, they've had this mantra that, well, you can't fight City Hall. You can't do this. You can't do that. The truth is, they don't want you to fight City Hall. They don't want you to fight your...
Well, it is very difficult to fight the government. But there's no need to fight the government. You fight the individuals that are abusing their power in that government, and that's who you go after. You can get some traction there. It's difficult, okay? It's not an easy task. You have to educate yourself. You know, I think I mentioned we got a course going on. It's a live course right now, and it's Court Access in the Common Law. It's exactly what my book is written about, but we're teaching that course right now. And I teach people, you know, each one of these sessions is 3 hours long, and we've got about 8 sessions done already, and probably another 8 more to go at least. So it's a reasonably long course hour wise. But the thing is at the end of the day, just going through the course and absorbing the knowledge as best as you can is sufficient for most people, maybe. But if you want to go into the courts and win, okay, and you buckle down and you do the homework that we give and the reviewing that we, which is mostly just reviewing everything and reading. You do that, I can promise you, you have a really good chance of winning any righteous case you take into the courts. Again, maybe not necessarily today because the courts are corrupt, but you can get something out of it, and you can put these people, you know, kind of put them on notice and put a little fear into them and get something out of it. Potentially. But again, people need to know this. They need to do it. And again, that course is a very, very inexpensive course. Anybody can afford it. So, and also if people have a little bit of a problem, people with a limited income, you know, they can come in and make payments however they want to make it. We don't, you know, they can put it across the year and pay payments on a monthly basis, a couple of bucks here and there. But it's very inexpensive anyway.
Yeah. I wanted to end this in a couple of minutes because I thought you told me that you needed about 90 minutes for this interview. But I also forgot to tell you when I brought you on that you're on one of the stations you're on is called Shake and Wake Radio. And
I remember Shake and Wake. I used to talk a lot on that one.
Yes,
the original
did.
Founders of that.
Yeah, Annie is still the station owner. Is what her name is, and her husband.
They used to broadcast our meetings. If
yes,
they're interested
they did.
In doing that again, they can come back.
They did.
You know, yeah. So I mean, if they're interested, you're interested, any podcast interested in coming to our monthly, our weekly meetings. We have a meeting every Monday night from 9 p.m. to 11 Eastern time, and so it's an open forum and a lot of good information. And we'll be running once a month. We'll be taking one of those Monday night meetings and running a meeting with all of the leaderships of the county committees of safety in order to get conversation going and start discussing solutions and different problems that we all have and share.
Yeah, good stuff, John. did you want to take one last minute or two to say anything or?
Well, you know, we have a sheriff out in Michigan, Sheriff Darr. He's the strongest constitutional sheriff I ever met. He's been all over our website. He's absorbed a lot of stuff. He's read the books that I've written. And he's mustering together every sheriff he can, trying to get them to come in and learn the common law and understand the powers and the authorities that they have. We're hopeful of that, and he's looking to take it beyond his state. You know, he's working within his state right now, but he's going to take it nationwide. People need to come to get the education. You want government by consent, and you want to be part of that and start to fix this problem, and you should be. Anybody that realizes that there's a problem and suspects that this is the solution, they have a duty now to come take a look and see once for themselves what we're doing. And I am convinced, there's no doubt in my mind, if you're honestly doing that, you'll see the wisdom of our plan. We're doing exactly what our founding fathers did, nothing different. It was the committees of safety that came together to call forth the First Continental Congress. It was the committees of safety that called forth the Second Continental Congress. It was the committees of safety that put forth and brought forth the Declaration of Independence. It was the committees of safety that governed themselves in a process and created a temporary government in order to fight the war, the Revolutionary War. It was the committees of safety that came together in order to debate the Constitution and bring it to life in 1789. It was the committee of safety that brought forth the Bill of Rights in 1791. It's the committees of safety that controlled that government for quite some time after the Constitution came into play and took the place to have government by consent. But all of that has been lost. We've resurrected all of that because it's the committees of safety and only the committees of safety, which is the people themselves, that can save America, period.
Yes, it is.
National Liberty Alliance to learn. NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Yes, it is. I'm in Southwest Michigan myself, so there's two counties I can talk to.
Do you know Sheriff Darr?
No, I haven't met him yet.
Heard of him? No. Send me an email or something. I'll make a connection with some people out there, and I don't know. Trying to think of what county Sheriff Darr is in.
I'm in.
I don't remember.
I'm in Cass County, but I'm very near Berrien County.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that's very close. That might even be the county, Berrien County, that he is sheriff of.
Berrien, B-E-R-R-I-E-N.
Oh, Berrien. Oh,
yes.
I'm thinking Barry.
Yeah. I met
but
two
anyway,
women from
Berrien. But anyway, there's a lot of people, and we have a lot of members in Michigan, and Michigan is on fire. I think Michigan, by the work of a couple of people, individuals, Sheriff Darr being the pinnacle of that group, they're moving through Michigan like a wildfire, bringing the knowledge of the committees of safety And they're working really hard to develop committees of safety in every single county in Michigan. And I think they may end up being the first state to do that.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'll let you go for the now, for the time now, John. And thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And it was a good opportunity to get the message out, the message of true liberty.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We're talking to you soon.
All right. Godspeed. Bye.
Okay, I'll take a short break, then bring Judd on. About five minutes, 18 seconds, actually. We won't consent. Chase the Dragon. Be right back.